You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. I don't think there's an American, I don't think there's a person on this planet who, at this point in life, doesn't think at least periodically about when the next attack might come, when there may be a terrorist issue, when there may be some bodily threat to an individual or a group of individuals. We've seen this play out so many times, and not only here at home, but certainly across the globe. So the question becomes, can our government, can our law enforcement officials prevent this from happening and yet stay within the realm of current laws? A very important question, a very important topic, and that's why I've asked my guest this week, attorney, author, and educator Alan Dershowitz. His new book is The Preventative State, a book that I would certainly urge you to go out and buy. This is a magnificent book, truly covering the issue that I think everybody asks is how far can we go and why didn't we go far enough? So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Alan Dershowitz about the book and getting his insights on this. Alan, nice to have you with us.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you so much.
You know this better than anybody. I don't think there's a day that goes through in anybody's life. At some point in their life, they think, God, you know, will it happen to Boston? Will it happen to Worcester? Will it happen anywhere in the world again? And why can't we prevent these attacks, especially nowadays where we have all this sophisticated intelligence that gives us a head start on indicating that something could happen? That's in play, Alan, but your book goes further and says that, you know, we can't go outside of our Constitution, especially here in the U.S., but we've got to do more to protect society. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, and you know, it happened to me just a week ago. You remember that terrible situation in Washington, D.C. A few weeks ago where a terrorist killed two people who worked for the Israeli embassy, one man a Christian, the other woman Jewish, and I was supposed to get an honorary degree the next day from a small school in Florida, and the security people were terrified that there might be a copycat attempt at my life. And so they redoubled their security. They created an exit plan for me. They put policemen there with bulletproof glass shields in front of me. They drove me to the event with machine guns and did everything in their power successfully to prevent any recurrence. So, you know, I've experienced this personally. I've had three or four threats on my life where I've had to have the FBI basically live with me for a couple of days to prevent the contract from being carried out on my life by a neo-Nazi. And so, you know, for me, it's personal, but I also understand that it's systemic throughout the world. Could we have prevented 9/11? Could Israel have prevented October 7th? Could we have prevented Pearl Harbor? Could we have prevented the Second World War in Europe? In my book, The Preventive State, I have a whole chapter on how we could have prevented the Holocaust in the Second World War. If British and French government had decided to respond to Nazi Germany's violation of the Versailles Treaty in 1935, they could have taken preventive action. Goebbels, the head of the Nazi party, expected they would do that, and it would have probably killed 10,000 people, some innocents, but it would have saved the lives of 50 million people who were killed in the Second World War. So these are the kinds of decisions we face today when somebody has to decide whether to attack the Iranian nuclear program or whether to let them continue along the road to possibly developing a nuclear bomb. These are the kind of preventive decisions we face every day, ranging from COVID, how much compulsion do we use to make people get a vaccine, to you know, the most mundane issues. What do we do with somebody who's been arrested for a crime, who's presumed innocent, but who we think might be dangerous or might try to flee? These are all preventive decisions, and I put them all together. Larry Summers, the former president of Harvard, wrote a wonderful blurb for the book, and he said, you know, only Alan Dershowitz could have figured out how to put together all of these very, very, very different preventive measures into one book and try to create a legal framework for analyzing these problems. So I'm very proud of this book. It's a book I've been working on for 60 years. I've been teaching prevention since I got to Harvard in 1964. And then finally, at age 86, I decided to publish my what I think is my magnum opus, my most important book.
I have to agree. I mean, I've read the book, and I can tell you that the vibe, the feeling that I get is what I hear from neighbors, from friends, from people, right here in central Massachusetts. And that's, why couldn't we have done more? Why couldn't we been, where's the flexibility? Okay, laws are important, but you know what? At some point, the public safety is number one. Is this something that is it in your estimation, Alan, is it something that seems impossible to overcome? Or is it just that you've got a certain group that stands firm and says, this is the Constitution, these are the laws, you have to abide by them. We don't relish the thought of losing lives, but we have to abide by what we have in on paper. That sounds a little weird to me.
Yeah, and, some of our framers, Thomas Jefferson, basically said, he didn't use these words, but he said the Constitution is not a suicide pact. And then those words were used by Justice Jackson 2 years later. The Constitution is not a suicide pact. It doesn't require us to accept inevitably the kind of dangers that we face. It's flexible. The due process clause, what does that mean? It means the process that is due to you, considering the circumstances. Often we overreact. What happens is we don't do enough to prevent, and then we do too much afterward. Perfect example was we didn't do enough to prevent Pearl Harbor. There was a lot of intelligence that should have left us more prepared for Pearl Harbor. Then what happens afterward, we put 110,000 innocent Japanese Americans into detention centers when none of them committed any crimes, probably none of them would have committed any crimes. So we overreact after the fact because we underreacted before the fact. And maybe some people think that's true of Israel, too. On October 7th, they didn't do enough to prevent the horrors of 1,200 people being killed and 250 being kidnapped. And so afterward, they went into Gaza, and, some people think maybe they overreacted. Reasonable people could disagree about that. But the point historically is that it always is the case that when you overreact after the fact, it's often because you've underreacted before the fact.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus from New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, your host. This is this week's edition of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author, educator, and a man who knows more about the Constitution than probably anybody on this planet, Alan Dershowitz. His new book is The Preventative State, and we're talking about how far can we go to protect society from attacks, from threats that seem to be so numerous today without jeopardizing what many feel very important, that the Constitution is the playbook. And Alan, that really goes back to something I have noticed, and you know this better than anybody, but I want to get your sense. You go from one administration to another. You look at the makeup of Supreme Courts. I'm old enough to say that there have been many changes in the Supreme Court. Many times, you can have existing laws within the Constitution, and yet, depending on who's sitting there, what their frame of mind is, what their viewpoints may be, what their background may be, interpretation, that also plays into all this, doesn't it? I mean, you can have a law on the books and two different, jurists can look at this and come away with different opinions. Does that make it difficult? Does that make the waters murky?
It does. And I have a cartoon on my wall in my office which shows a group of founders of the Constitution writing the Constitution. And one of them says, just for fun, why don't we make what's Constitution a little bit loosey-goosey, and we'll have fun. And they did. Words like due process, cruel and unusual punishment, these are vague terms, and different justices interpret them differently in different events. For example, after Pearl Harbor, a liberal justice like Hugo Black was willing to allow the detention of 110,000 innocent people. He would never have done that prior to Pearl Harbor. So, and after 9/11, we were willing to sustain the Patriot Act, which carried with it the potential for torture and that kind of thing. So, you know, judges are just human beings in robes, and they read the newspapers. They react to their own threats. They react to their own ability to understand the world around them. So, yeah, they're just human beings. And the Constitution, you know, it's a parchment preachment. It's written in bold terms, but it's subject to interpretation by human beings.
Now, another thing, I know you allude to it in the book, is that there's no doubt that when, you know, in Pearl Harbor, for example, I tend to be a history buff, so I'm always got my nose in the book about American history. But you know, when we have these, when we have these catastrophic events that take place and harm the lives of many, then you get the masses to arch up their back and say, enough is enough. You know, but then, as you said earlier, everybody gets tense and says, oh, we got to do something. And then as soon as the dust settles, it all goes back to where we were. What will it take before we can prevent future attacks, where we can prevent future catastrophes, and yet feel that we didn't overstep our boundaries in regards to laws, or in this case, the Constitution? Is there a happy medium?
There is, and that's what the Constitution calls for when it uses terms like due process. We need a happy medium. It was Benjamin Franklin who said, those who would give up fundamental liberties for a little bit of security deserve neither. But the thesis of my book, The Preventive State, is that we should sometimes be prepared to give up a little bit of inessential liberty to create much, much greater security. It's striking that balance that's so important. And yet today we don't have a framework, a jurisprudence. We don't have any kind of a set of principles that allow us to decide what to do in advance. You know, after a person has committed a crime, we say better 10 guilty go free than even one innocent be wrongly convicted, a ratio of 10 to 1. But do we say that about prevention? Is it better for 10 terrorist attacks to occur than even for a few innocent people to be detained for a short period of time? We don't have that framework. And I try to create that in my book. This is the first book ever written by a lawyer that creates a jurisprudence for the preventive state. That's why it's so important. By the way, as important as it is, the Harvard faculty doesn't want me to talk about it. I got canceled recently at the Harvard Club of New York. The law school faculty hasn't invited me to talk to them about it because I've been critical of Harvard. I'm not necessarily on the side of everything Trump is doing, cutting off research grants, but I do think Harvard has had a real problem with tolerating and some schools actually encouraging bigotry. So I haven't been loyal to the school that I'm associated with for 60 years. And as a result, they have tried to cancel me, which is why I love being on shows like yours, because I can get directly to the reader and tell the reader to go and, you know, buy my book on Amazon. Don't count on a Harvard law school or Harvard University to promote my book. It won't do it because they're afraid of what they might say about Harvard.
That amazes me because you spent a good portion of your career there, you know, helping to educate many of today's successful, you know, lawyers and people in the legal profession. But again, Alan, it goes back to a fundamental belief, and that is that, oh, no, you can't, you, Alan Dershowitz, you can't have an opinion, or you, Al Vona, you can't have an opinion if it doesn't fall within the purviews of what we think is proper. Hey, human life is at stake here. Change is sometimes needed. And if we don't allow open dialogue, nothing's going to happen, Alan, right?
What's even worse is the change is occurring, but we haven't noticed it. We haven't noticed that we've moved away from the deterrent reactive state to the preventive state. That has enormous implications for our safety and for our liberty. And my book, The Preventive State, is the first book ever written about this developing phenomenon, which is why you know, it's the most important book I've written in my 60 years of writing. It's my 57th book. You know, remember Heinz ketchup, 57 flavors. So I've now have 57 flavors. I'm now working on my 58th book that has a cute title, Trump to Harvard, Go Fund Yourself. Who will win? But that book won't be out for a while. So if you want to read what I have to say, you have to read The Preventive State. That's my current book.
You know, I have to say kudos to you because you, regardless of where you may have started in life, you've been open-minded enough to see the reality of what's taking place in this world today and saying, hey, look, I agree with this, but at some point, we've got to be a little bit more flexible here. And I, in spite of, and you're right, every time that there's a, take for example, you know, Colorado this week, people are outraged and it's going to be talked about for weeks. And then it dies down, Alan. It dies down again.
Absolutely.
And there'll be points.
We have such short memories when it comes to even disasters and tragedies like this. You know, in Israel, they have a longer memory because although October 7th was just one day, they kidnapped 250 people, 58 of whom they're still holding. So when you have a situation like that, people can't forget. But even 9/11, people did forget after a relatively short period of time, although we lost so many good people at the World Trade Center.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I want to get your sense, and I may be way off base, but I think this akin to almost like a board game, a chess or checkers. It's like power play. I am not going to meet that other person, the leader of that nation or that group, because that means I'm going to give up ground and I look weak. So I guess what I'm asking you is how important, how much does ego play when you get leaders who know that there needs to be change, there needs to be more flexibility or open dialogue, and yet are unwilling to do that? Is that problematic?
Yeah, it is. We're seeing it right now with Iran. Of course, chess was invented by Iran. Checkmate comes from the Persian term shah, met. The shah is dead. The king is dead. And so they invented this game of chess, and now they're playing three-dimensional chess with Donald Trump, and they're trying to get a deal, and there are threats. If there's no deal, there'll have to be an attack, and we'll wait and see what happens. But there's a lot at stake in Iran, and I have a whole chapter in my book, The Preventive State, about what should happen in Iran and whether or not we make the same mistake. We made the most horrible mistake in 1935 by Britain and France not invading Nazi Germany. That was what I call a false negative, a failure to take action where action would have saved lives. And I hope we're not making the same mistake with Iran. Only time will tell. You know, the real issue is if you don't do something, that doesn't show. If you do something, if you make an attack, that's front page headline. And if you're going to make a mistake, you'd rather have your mistake invisible than visible. And so people sometimes err on not acting rather than acting. And I go through all of these various scenarios in the Preventive State. I create a chart about when to act, when not to act. I actually assign numbers to the decision to act and not to act. And so that's why I think this is my most important book. And I'm hoping people will read it and learn from it.
Yeah, as I said at the opening, it really is an eye-opening book. We've got a few minutes left, so, but I want to ask you, you've heard this term a million times, many have, protocol. We must stay within protocol. We must work within our framework. I'm not a believer that everything, protocol is important in life, whether it's a business, whether it's a social organization, just in your own personal life. But at some point, you have to have flexibility because changes are in the making. Things can happen. And things can land on your front door. And if you're not prepared or not willing, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So how strongly do you feel that the United States has that ability to be flexible and not stick to protocol so much when it comes to saving lives?
And there's complaint when Donald Trump, who doesn't believe in protocol, who believes in flexibility and who changes things, When he does it, there's complaint about that. I think one of the reasons I've been such a successful lawyer is I refuse to accept the protocols that usually govern lawyers' decisions. For example, you have some lawyers say, I never put my client on the witness stand. I never say never. There's going to be an occasion when you do put your client on the witness stand. So, you know, rules, I'm not talking about rules of ethics or rules of law, but just general protocols have to have exceptions. And in the preventive state, I give a series of examples of when we had to change our perceptions, and the failure to do it could and sometimes has caused cataclysmic results. And then we learn our lesson and we change it, but often it's too late. And so the key is to try to act preventively without denying people their basic and fundamental rights. If we could have prevented 9/11 by arresting 10 people, two or three of whom mistakenly, and kept them for a month in detention, even though their rights would have been denied, it would have been a trade-off that's worth it. If Israel could have prevented October 7th by bombing a Hamas military center, even if some civilians were killed in the process, it would have saved the killing of 1,200 Israeli civilians. So, you know, these trade-offs are worth it. And you can't have absolutes. Absolutes are the enemy of thoughtful approaches to these problems.
No question about it. The Preventative State is Alan Dershowitz's new book, and I love the fact that it's not written as a law book. It's really a user-friendly book and something that every person can gain something by. Alan, if people want to get just more information from you personally, is there a website or a way they can reach out to you directly?
Yeah, I'm not a big technical person, but there is a website. I do a podcast 3 days a week called The Dersh Show, and it's on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday on all the podcast platforms, Rumble and all that stuff. And so you can get too much of me. If you don't get enough from my book, you can listen to me 3 days a week. I'll be on every night, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and talk about a lot of these and other issues of current events.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Again, the book is The Preventative State, Alan Dershowitz's new book. As I said, just a great read, expand your horizons, get a sense of what we might be able to do to prevent future disasters and the loss of life. That's really what it's all about. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. It's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. Again, I want to thank Alan Dershowitz, the book is The Preventative State. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.